Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English.
Today. And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. I guess we could talk about the economy now.
Yeah, we say exciting second hour. Let's talk about the economy now. There's numbers involved.
How about
unemployment? So exciting. If you have a pacemaker or heart issues, you might want to change the channel because we're going to be really exciting. I don't know. It's the dreary science, so let's do it in a monotone.
How about ADB, Automatic Data Processing, which is now simply called ADP.
ADP, yes.
Said Thursday that businesses added 215,000 new jobs last month in their
private
section.
Sector. They don't do the employment for or the employment payroll for any of the governmental entities.
They don't?
No, they don't.
They don't pay the military or anything?
No military pay, no local government or school districts or anything. So when ADP comes out with their numbers, it is obviously not the whole economy, and it's obviously not the governmental employees. But the fact that they saw in just their area of the economy that large a growth in employment, that's impressive because they don't do all the private employment either.
Though it's
they would like to.
They only do 20% of the private sector only.
Only.
Boy,
that's still huge.
Job.
Talk about
they
antitrust.
They do ours.
They do ours.
So they know whether we're employed or not.
They don't do your and mine because we don't.
They don't do what?
Your payroll, your paycheck,
oh, okay.
And my paycheck.
I started to say that they better not be doing that.
Yeah, they don't do our paychecks, but yeah. They do our employees' paychecks because it's a very different.
We're doing
system.
Our part, folks. I just want you to know. And probably the most and another thing that happened in the middle of that jobs report that I thought was pretty good is of that 155,000 new jobs created last month. About 30,000 of those jobs were in the manufacturing sector. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot of jobs. 30,000 jobs, man, you know, even times 12, that's not a huge number. It is if you consider that the general perception and, unfortunately, the fact for a number of years has been that the manufacturing jobs, the jobs in manufacturing have been shrinking in number. The fact that 30,000 new manufacturing jobs were created. And that's not hiring somebody to fill an existing job position. That's actually creating a new slot and putting someone in it in the month of December. Why December? December is normally, for manufacturing, a relatively slow month. It's winter. People are focused on something other than manufacturing. Secondly, with the fiscal cliff issues with payroll taxes and taxes in general facing employers, surveys of the employers consistently said, particularly in the manufacturing area, that they were reluctant to create new positions and hire new people because they didn't know what the tax situation was going forward. Yet, now we see that about 30,000 new jobs were created,
right,
even in that depressed environment. And the reason
I can tell you why. We can see, you know, when we look at the numbers on spending, consumer spending, we look at the numbers on productivity and profitability on the overall economy, they have been growing consistently for a pretty good amount of time. That means people have to hire new people to cover it. There's only so much productivity growth you can get. If you're increasing your productivity by 5% a year, which is what we're doing, that's incredible.
Right.
We're able to make, if somebody was making 100 widgets, now they're making 105 widgets. But if the demand is going up more than 5%, and it is, spending has gone up much more than 5%, that means you have to hire new people. Even if it's more expensive to hire new people than it was before, you still do it because there's 105 things that can be made by that new person.
Widgets.
They're a very important thing, these widgets. Widgets fall in the category of stuff.
But it's manufacturing.
Yes. Manufacturing stuff of widgets.
Mm-hmm.
You're
mm-hmm.
right.
And again, the December payroll number showed the same thing that we've seen over the last 4 years. Government jobs are decreasing. private sector jobs are increasing. Now, there's another little number in there.
How little? Is it a font size issue?
It's a pretty good size number, but if you look at the fact that there's about 4.8 million unemployed people officially in the United States, there's about 267,000 of those who have been unemployed since 2007 and are actively looking for a job.
That's a long unemployment period.
It is, and that's a problem.
That's
because,
a five-year unemployment period.
And
at this point, they may not be looking for a job anymore.
No, they're actually actively looking for work. Two different surveys have indicated both the from a governmental point of view, the unemployment offices require you to certify and to show what businesses you visited and so on. Admittedly, you can get around that. But when the survey, the household survey is done, it's anonymous, and so people generally tend to tell the truth that they're legitimately, seriously looking for work. They haven't dropped out. They haven't quit looking for work. There's still about 250,000 or a little more in people in the United States who have been out of work now since 2007. Now, my fascination with that is, who are these people? Turns out, and this you're going to, I don't know whether like this or not, pretty good-sized chunk of those are government workers. People who were working for local or state governments who aren't anymore because the job no longer exists. It's been replaced by a computer, and so they know how to do, and actually I am acquainted with one of these people who did environmental planning or something similar for a local government. The job position was eliminated. So this person is no longer doing local government environmental planning. Just out of curiosity, I actually contacted the local government that this person used to work for and found out that now that's done at the state level. So I went to the state and I called and found out it's done by a computer. This person, though, is still unemployed, still actively looking for work, doing the same thing that she was doing before. And the issue is it doesn't exist anymore. And I think that's where a lot of this problem comes into play. A lot of the unemployment comes into play. We've had technological advances. The government has actually had to get more productive, which is, it's almost a contradiction in terms, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
But the government has actually had to get more productive, and so they
productive
have,
government. I don't think that it is an oxymoron. It doesn't work.
Basically,
you don't have a productive government.
I don't know, and I've not read any indication that there's been a reduction in services from governments across the country. But when you look at
A reduction of services.
What reduction services? Like
and
what?
Lots and lots. So
what services are they reduced?
Police, firefighters, teachers.
There's fewer police?
Lots less.
I thought there were more police now than there were 4 years ago.
No, go up to Detroit.
Well, let's forget Detroit for a second. Detroit is the exception. Let's talk about across the rest of the nation.
There are a lot less employed
teachers.
There's
not like 750,000 people in Detroit out of work. No,
if you just look at Texas, Texas is one of the least hit by this. But if you're just looking at Texas, if you look at the Austin School District or if you look at the Dallas School District, Austin is actually the largest school district in Texas. And when you look at the Austin School District, they have fewer teachers employed right now than they did 4 years ago. If you look at the number of...
Have the classes gotten larger?
I don't know. I haven't attended for a while.
No, there's a law in Texas that says a class can only be...
A certain size per teacher. Correct.
And they're not violating that, which means they still got teachers in the classes.
Right. And some of those are probably going to be... I'm not exactly sure how they're doing it. I do know that there are less teachers there. I know that there are less teachers in Dallas. Those are two that I did the research on.
Maybe somebody out there can give us some insight on this.
There are a lot less police officers than there were. So those are areas that we can see an immediate shift. The services being offered. This is not a productivity growth issue. This is they don't have the money to do it. And there are stories of towns that have few enough police officers that the crime rate has jumped up.
Really?
Yeah, and those are in California, for instance. There's places where the cities are right on the edge of bankruptcy and they can't afford the police officers that it would take to keep the crime rate down.
I think there's exceptions like that, but when you have, this is from my perspective, when you have that large of a decrease in governmental employees. I don't think you would find just exceptions. I think across the, for instance, if it's going to be that large and it's going to hit the nation, we would have tended to hear about it. Look, I just wondered if anybody out there, if anyone is listening, has had any experience with that and have noticed a decrease in governmental services. Maybe I'm goofy. I have not.
You are goofy. That. What is this maybe I'm goofy business?
Anyway, the telephone numbers to call in here, since I'm asking you to call, would be 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County, or
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
Well, that kind of brings me to another point that that I find to be interesting. There's a survey, Consumer Confidence Survey. You're probably familiar with that. Gallup did a very careful Consumer Confidence Survey, and it was released on January 3rd. And I want you to listen very carefully to what I'm about to say. When we look at the us versus them, about one in three people in the United States think the United States economy is in good shape and likely to get better, okay?
Okay.
And obviously about two-thirds of the people think that the United States economy is in bad shape and likely to get worse, all right? However, when you ask those same people about their own financial situation, this is amazing, 69% of the people say their financial situation is good and getting better, and only 27% say bad and likely to get worse. Now listen to this. Did you hear what I said?
Right.
Roughly 70% of the people in the United States, and this is across the whole country, are saying that their economic condition is in good shape and likely to get better, but only one in three think the situation across the United States is good or likely to get better. Did you get that contradiction?
Yes.
Absolute, total contradiction. You know, again, I think what we hear in the news, we read things, we see things, we assume things from them. We look out into the big wide world and we say things must really be bad out there. But when the same question is asked about, do you know anything personally that would indicate things are bad, people say no. And the reason, I think, is the news reports bad news. As George Will said, we don't report it when airplanes land safely.
I don't know why, except that it would fill up all of the news with Flight 112 landed safely today.
Maybe,
Flight 113 landed safely today.
Maybe,
again.
Maybe because I'm in Salado and a big chunk of the newspaper, the local Salado newspaper, is taken up with the police reports. And the police reports do a good job of replacing the comic strips.
Ooh, yeah. You watch the criminals being silly.
No. There's no criminals. It's like very few criminals. Like there's one arrest in the whole week. But the interesting thing was, you know, received call about wounded deer. As the officer approached the house, the wounded deer ran off into the woods, cleared. You know, you read that and you realize that things really aren't that bad. I mean, it is maybe the Salado newspaper reports more good news than bad news or something. But the bottom line to it is, I guess we're probably in pretty good shape, to say the least. Manufacturing is up, by the way. The survey of businesses across the United States where the purchasing managers' indexes are figured, all of the purchasing managers' indexes right now are above 50. What does that mean? It means that across the United States, and it just came out, that was a new index that was just reported. Across the United States, the people who are doing the purchasing for businesses, and they purchase raw materials, they purchase whatever needs to be purchased, everything from the desks to the raw materials, are optimistic and positive about the future and see growth in their businesses taking place. That is probably contrary to what you've heard from other directions, but I am amazingly optimistic about that as well. I know you keep saying that over and over again. But
what are we pessimistic about? Let's say the things that people say we're always optimistic. Well, let's lay out some things that the market is in a bubble. It is way overpriced. The real estate market has, for my opinion here, I think it's in recovery. It's in good shape. Mm-hmm. It's coming up. The bond market, interest rates are incredibly low. Prices on bonds are incredibly high. All it takes is a little tweak. The interest rates go up a bit, and you're going to see a cratering of that market. It's going to happen. When it happens, we don't know. But eventually, when interest rates come up, and they will come up at some point, they will come up. One of the things we know is interest rates go up and down. We've only seen the downward movement. The upward movement will happen again. You can say, Jake, are you prescient? How is it that you know this? Because it happens. It happens. And when it does, the bond market is going to have a lot of pain for the people that are in it. Just be aware of that. So while we are really optimistic about the economy and about a lot of the other areas.
Let me caveat that.
Let's go ahead and caveat it.
There's a place for bonds in a portfolio. Right. However, you want absolutely secure bonds, preferably backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. And you want bonds with a short duration, and you don't even have to understand what duration means. It just needs to be a low number and a relatively short maturity. And I know that sounds weird that I should be saying that, because obviously the higher-yielding bonds are the ones that are popular right now.
Right. High-yield bonds, people are like, oh, I want some high-yield bonds. That sounds great.
We used to call them junk bonds.
We still call them junk bonds.
And they may do all right. I'm not saying if the economy does well, they may do quite well. But the purpose in having bonds in the portfolio, contrary to what a lot of things I'm reading say, is not to generate income. The purpose in having bonds in your portfolio is to have a safety net. If something totally unexpected occurs and the stock market drops, your bonds are where you turn for your dry powder, for the money that, and again, keeping them short and secure means you're not going to get huge yields on them. But if you want to, this is probably the easiest way to understand the danger in bonds. If you own bonds today, or if you're in a bond mutual fund, look at the price of the average bond in the fund, or the current market price of the bond that you own.
This is part of the way we do it.
It's not uncommon for me to look at a bond and see it's priced on the market at 126.
That's $26 above 100.
That means when it matures, you'll get back 100%. Today, you could sell it for 126% of its value.
Which means that you lose 26 of that 126 immediately on maturity.
And I've talked to people who say, look, I've got this bond, it's paying me 6%, why should I worry? Well, it's not really paying 6%.
It might be 6% of 100.
6% of the face, but you're only getting a tiny, tiny piece if you look at the yield. And what's happening is part of that money that's being paid to you effectively is a return of your principal on which you have to pay taxes. Not a good position to be in.
If you paid $126 for a $100 face bond and it's paying you 6% of that $100, that's $6 a year. For you, it's not really 6% because it's $6 of $126. And yet you have to pay taxes
on the 6%.
On the 6% as if it was a total 6%. When that matures and it gives you $100 back out of your $126 down payment.
You get to write off the loss.
That's really nice.
At long-term capital gains loss rates, which is 15%. But you paid the taxes
and
at regular rates.
And if it's too big, you have to put it forward to the next year and the year after that and the year after that.
And I wanted to throw another piece of good news in here.
Don't throw it too hard. It might break. You're breaking news here.
Part of the cobbled together deal that was passed in the wee hours of the morning on the 1st was a permanent extension
of the alternative minimum tax.
No. That too.
Mm-hmm.
A permanent extension of the estate tax exclusion of $5 million per person.
Correct. $10 million a couple.
If you have your will set up properly, a couple, a married couple, can exclude $10 million from estate taxes.
That's fantastic.
I don't know a lot of people whose estates are worth more than $10 million.
Yeah, and they exist, but that's kind of what the estate tax was designed to do, is to tax people with large estates. I'm not a real big fan of the estate tax at all. I think it should go away, but this is a lot better than the $1 million exclusion that was there before.
And another point I wanted to make on the payroll thing, I found the numbers here. The non-farm payroll employment rose 155,000. Well, I mentioned that earlier. That's what was reported. This is better. The private sector in that report added 168,000 jobs.
That's pretty good.
Employment rose 155,000.
The private sector rose
168,000.
Which means we lost some jobs in the public sector.
In the government.
Still shrinking.
Lost jobs. And for Republicans, that should make them just happy as they could be.
This is something else, where, since we're on that subject, something that I would give as a pep talk to the Republicans out there.
You would?
Yes. At this point in the election cycle, directly after the president has been elected, I looked this up, yes, two seats in the Senate were gained by the Democrats. Seats in the House were gained by the Democrats. So this is the point of...
So I was right on that.
Yes, you were. This is the point of optimal power.
Everybody note this down. Jeff was right.
Jake was wrong. Yes. Optimal power by the Democrats at this point. This is the point when they have the most political clout in Washington, when they can ram through whatever they want, supposedly.
Nah.
They can't do it. They were not able to get what they wanted. Now, the Republicans at this point are a bit shamefaced. They're upset that they didn't pass Plan B, which was taxes would have gone up on people that had $1 million of income or more instead of the $450,000 of income or more. But the president has, for more than a year, been talking about $250,000. He's been talking about that for the entire election cycle. This was the number he was using. He said 2%, the top 2% of people need to have their income go up. Well, $450,000 is closer to the top 1% of people having
it
income.
Is.
So what we're talking about here is the president, in his point of highest power, had to make some very big compromises, which means when we talk about a lot of the other issues that are important to Republicans, gun control, cutting the budget, a lot of the other things, the Republicans are probably not going to give up a lot of ground on that.
Yep.
It's probably not going to happen. If you think back to the first election of our current president and what he did when he came into office, the sweeping changes that took place that were rammed through without a single Republican vote, if you think of Obamacare and the other things, that's not going to happen again. We have another opportunity for that to happen in 2 years, for the Republicans to lose more seats or lose the majority in the House, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think that Americans are very happy having a balanced government that doesn't do a whole bunch. We get upset when they don't do a whole bunch when they need to do a whole bunch, like the fiscal cliff. We're like, why don't you do something? But we elected a government that's very carefully balanced in a stalemate.
And they're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, they are. They're screaming at each other and waving fists, and they're jumping up and down, and their faces are turning red, and veins are bulging, and they're great TV opportunities.
One of the things that I have taken out of all this excitement that went on, all this drama. Despite what all the pundits said, the economy appears to have basically ignored it.
Yep.
And I think, and very unlike 2011, by the way, when the stock market tanked and the economy in the third quarter of 2011 was definitely affected by the
debt ceiling debate.
We
still have that ability to happen again.
We actually saw about $1.6 trillion lost.
We are at the debt ceiling at this moment.
Yeah,
now, there are moves being made by the Secretary of Treasury to not issue debt in specific areas and to kind of eke out But even using the emergency systems that he's using right now, we've got 2 or 3 months. And if we have any major issues in Afghanistan, that's not going to be the case. This is not a good place to be. The Republicans know it. The Democrats know it. But the Republicans are going to use this. I realize this is another point based on what I was just saying. The president says he's not going to debate over the debt ceiling. Well, if that's the case, then the debt ceiling should have already been passed. If there's no debate involved, the Republicans are going to use this as a lever. It's going to happen.
They're going to try to, but I don't know that it's going to work. I really don't. I think probably they'll discuss it, but we'll see. I think one of the things I think has been learned, hopefully, maybe I'm too optimistic.
Sincerely doubt that they've learned from their past mistakes. The government doesn't do that.
The two extremes in the Democrats and the Republicans were both very unhappy with the deal that was put together.
Yes. Both sides were unhappy.
And if both extremes are that unhappy, it must be a good deal. And I think the possibility exists that people will actually sit down and talk to each other. I don't know that this is true. I think we may be past the worst. And I think the idea is that if we can get together and govern and come out with something that's reasonable, and the Republicans lose their image over the next several years of the party of no, the possibility exists that they can get a majority to the point, maybe even elect a president, get to a point where they can actually make some serious changes in the government. We'll see. And I think the extreme Democrats are now a minority that have been isolated a little bit. So we'll see. And again, maybe I'm too optimistic. I do know that the economy no longer and the stock market no longer consider an impasse in Congress to be something to be terribly feared.
Right.
They're convinced at this point that even if we go over the edge, Congress will pull us back.
Yeah. They're going to have to.
I hope the folks on Wall Street are right and the folks, the pundits in Washington are wrong.
Worst case scenario, we go over a bunch of cliffs. Congress will eventually recognize that their elections are at stake, and they come back around and they say, okay, we have to fix this. This isn't like, for instance, when we talk about brinksmanship, war issues like World War I, where they walk up to the brink and they fall off the edge, and as soon as people start shooting guns, it becomes very, very hard to back off of the cliff.
That's true.
Climb back up it and go back, where when we're talking about taxes, Congress can pass a retroactive bill.
Yeah, now that we got a new Congress, they can do that.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to break for commercials. You are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers to call in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes after these words from the sponsors of KTEM. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Do you have just a moment to step into an area that pure politics has nothing to do with the economy?
That's what we've been talking about, isn't it?
Well, not really.
I was going to talk about the
fiscal cliff
market
and stuff.
I won't spend
long on it, but okay. You've heard me talk about this. What I would recommend, and it applies to every aspect of politics as well as the economy, is that people take a rational, reasoned approach to decisions and concepts that are before us. And it's really hard to do, and this is the example that I'm talking about. After the shooting in Connecticut, there's a knee-jerk reaction on one side to say, let's ban all assault weapons. And then there's the knee-jerk reaction on the other side to say, that's a horrible idea, I have my right to keep and bear arms. There is a problem that isn't being covered by either of those statements, and that is the mass shooting. If we take a look at what actually happened, and if you look at Connecticut, it already has an assault weapon ban. the weapon in question was registered to the mother of the killer since 1994, which is what the assault weapons ban in Connecticut says. You have to, if you have it, it had to be registered. If you had it before 1994, it had to be registered in 1994, and you can't sell it to anybody else. Okay, so anything that the federal law does to create an assault weapon ban would be no more stringent than that. In fact, it would have to be registered at the date of the law. This is the way it works. So making an assault weapon ban to prevent something that an assault weapon ban didn't prevent is a knee-jerk reaction. Saying that no regulation should occur is also a knee-jerk reaction. If we approach this in a nonpartisan, non-emotional way, it's really hard to do when kids have been killed, and it's really hard to do when politics is involved. Otherwise, our Thanksgiving dinners would not be anywhere near as heated. But if we approach these with a solution in mind rather than a, those are bad, let's get rid of them, or no, you're bad for saying that, let's get rid of you, the reality exists that the guy needed psychological help, and that's falling by the wayside here. We have a really serious issue in finding...
Actually, he needed psychiatric help.
Yes, he did. He needed...
Seriously.
Yeah, it's a big difference. You're right. But his mother was trying to commit him. We need to look carefully without hurting a lot of rights that exist already. How do we get help for people that need help? And how do we get them away from people they might hurt if they look like they might be hurting? This is where the debate should be. But as soon as we get into an area where children have been killed, emotions get in the way. And let me tie this into the economy here. This is the reason why most investors barely make any money or lose money in the market, is because they let their emotions guide their actions, just like it was a football game or a political discussion, rather than a long-term business decision. If people ran their businesses the way they do in politics or the way they do when they're talking about the stock market, none of the businesses that exist out there would survive for very long.
A lot of businesses don't survive
for very
long.
It's true. It is true. But the people that do create successful businesses do it by saying, yes, there are emotions involved, but we have to look at the reality of the situation. So approach reality instead of emotion. Recognize that everyone involved here is an actual person. We tend to make people into demons or angels because they agree with us in certain areas or disagree on others. The President of the United States is neither a demon nor an angel. He's a person. The head of the Republican Party, the Speaker of the House, is not a demon. He's not an angel. He gets up in the morning. He probably goes to the bathroom and sits down for a while.
He's a Boehner.
Yeah, all of the people that we're talking about, they do things into the toilet that we do to the toilet. These are real people. These are not demons. These are not angels. They're not saying, I want to destroy everything.
You're never
going to
make
it. Nor are
they
saying, I'm going to give everyone all goodwill and beneficence.
You are losing your popularity.
I know. I need to demagogue. I need to point at everybody else and demonize them and say they don't agree with me, and so they're bad. But I don't think any solutions occur when that happens. So anyway,
it's a lot more fun.
You were going to say something, and now I've done my soapbox.
It's a lot more fun. It is a lot drama.
It is. It is. Yeah. I agree.
Well, for the year, and I mentioned this in passing a little earlier, but I want to get down to the details here. For the year 2012, a year in which disaster was forecast over and over again, and generally speaking, people felt pretty bad about the year.
Wait, can I throw
the
in
Dow
a
Jones
in the middle of there?
The Dow Jones 30 Industrials were up 7.3%. Okay, big deal. But the S&P 500 rose 13.4% last year, which is a pretty good year, to say the least, and not all that far off what we predicted. The Russell 3000 index, which basically covers almost all of the market, almost all the stock market in the United States, rose 14.27%. So what we saw last year was an interesting classic year where a bull market climbs a wall of worry. And the bigger the worry,
the bigger the bull market.
The bigger the bull market. And the small stocks rose faster than the large stocks. Now, the obvious question, the index, is Russell 2000, for instance, was up more than the 3000. Yeah. What people say, well, why don't you have more money in small stocks? Well, they also went down a lot and up a lot, and that's
not get a lot of volatility.
But so, and of course, the S&P 500 started off with a 2% rise on the first trading day of the year, but it gets more interesting. I think, generally speaking, here in the United States, our view, and for that matter, the view in Europe, is that the European economy is in deep trouble. It's all we hear. This is sort of interesting. The MSCI, that's Morgan Stanley something index, Morgan Stanley Composite Index for Europe, was up a whopping 16% last year. In other words, if you, and you can, by the way, I wouldn't recommend it at all. You can actually buy an ETF that covers that particular index. I would not recommend you do it, but it was up 16% last year. And this is the point that I want to make. No matter how pessimistic the news is, the reality is going to be different. And the reality is reflected in the marketplace. And the marketplace says Europe got a lot better. And it did. By the way, the yield on Greek bonds dropped like mad. One of the, probably, and this is, you're going to love me for this probably. Do you know what single set of investments, I mentioned this last week, so you probably know, you could have purchased at the beginning of the year a liquid set of investments that's widely available and traded, and at the end of the year would have had the largest profit on?
What?
Greek government bonds.
Ooh, wow.
Up 90%. And you got, and the emerging market index up 15%. Everybody said, well, you know, their emerging markets are in deep trouble. China is not doing as well as we thought. Okay, well, it was up 15%.
Well, you know, a year ago I mentioned something that as a representation of the rest of the stock market, I called a company, one company. I said, this is an example. I didn't say buy this company. I said, this is an example of the underpriced market. Do you remember the company's name?
It was Bank of...
No, Bank of America.
Bank of China Company or
yes,
something.
Yes, Bank of America.
One of those countries.
I made that call in January of last year, 1 year ago. Do you know what is up at this point?
A bit.
117%. Now, what we're talking about here, that
you,
was an example.
Now, but you cheated because Warren Buffett bought the stock.
I said it 2 weeks before he bought it.
Well, he was.
I
busy.
Said it on the air two weeks before he bought it.
But he was buying it at the time, so you probably had insider information.
Oh, no, I didn't. I don't know Warren Buffett. I have been to Chinese buffets. Same spelling, different things. But so as an example of the economy.
My name was Warren. I would have a restaurant called the Warren Buffet.
Yes, that would be great. As an example of the economy, the places and companies that we've just been talking about, they're still undervalued. If we look at the overall stock market, the price-to-earnings ratio is incredibly low. We're talking about an economy that is booming. We're talking about profits that are up, productivity that's up. All of the good signals are out there, and people are afraid to invest, which is very typical.
Yeah, the
actual, our clients are very happy, but the most people out there are going, well, it's
the forward price-to-earnings ratio, I looked this up yesterday, of the S&P 500 is 12.3. Long-term average is 16. By the way, folks, what that means is the market is depressed. If the S&P 500 rose to its normal price-to-earnings ratio, hang on to your seats here, folks. If the market went up that much, the Dow Jones Industrial Average would be at about 18,500, and the S&P 500 would be over 2,000 today.
That would just put it at fair market today with no increases in earnings going forward. We're talking about a new price-to-earnings ratio equivalent of 16.
Now I'm going to call something here that you might want to write down.
Yeah, we tell people to
do it.
We've got our podcast up. It's on our website. You can listen to what we've said in the past.
Within the next few years, and I don't know whether it'll be 2 years or 4 years, but I would say on the outside 4 years from now, and that's on the outside,
I think
it may happen quicker, you will see a Dow of 20,000.
That is completely within the realms of reason.
But if I, you know, people, when I say that to people, they look at me like I've lost my mind. But you, I suspect...
Well, they're right, but that has nothing to do with the situation.
Well, that's true.
You lost your mind a long time ago, but, you know, it still doesn't mean you're wrong.
Yeah, well, that's probably true, too. So the bottom line to what I'm trying to say is everything I see in the economy, everything I see in the markets, everything I see in the valuations, everything I see in the trend lines are pointing at a single outcome right now, which in by itself is a little bit scary, including the worry index. The worry index is off the scale.
Yeah, people are worried. Well, worry is good for the economy. It's good for the stock market.
And all of those point to one thing, and that is we are due for several years at least of outperformance in the economy and in the stock market.
And I am
looking forward to the results in the next few years.
I would even point out something else here. Politically speaking, worry is good as well. When people are worrying about what's going on politically and they're talking about it and things are happening, that means it's less likely to happen because there are enough people worried about it. This is a good thing. Worry is a very good thing. Anyway, you were just going to say something. Go ahead. You forgot what it was.
No, I was going to say that the car sales were up like 18% over last year.
We called that one too.
Now, I will tell you that new automobile sales have not risen back to their record levels yet of 2006. But we're just getting warmed up, folks. Now, you're going to continue to hear a lot of bad news. Bad news sells papers. You're going to hear a lot about slow growth. Okay, I'm sorry that you're hearing about slow growth. But the fact is, we're doing a lot of what in the construction business is called backing and filling. We're going to get up to level ground, and when we do, things are going to take off. And can I tell you this with absolute certainty? No, I can't. Can I tell you that the probabilities are extremely high that's going to happen? Yes, because there can always be a totally unexpected event. But even if we look through the totally unexpected events that are possible, none of them that I can imagine at this point have the capability of blunting our growth in this economy. And let me tell you why. Coming off of an undervalued market, a low growth economy, and a lot of fear, we never in history have ever gotten major market crashes or major downturns in the economy. We get those coming off of bubbles on the upside. We get those coming off of ridiculous optimism. Euphoria, I think is what you call it, Jim.
Yes, yeah. Euphoria.
We are still in the pessimism realm across the board, which means that we are poised to go back into, we are in a bull market. The market, you know, people, when I ask them, well, how well do you think the market has done recently? Inevitably, I'm getting neutral to negative responses. Folks, from March of 2009, the stock market has doubled. And admittedly, the broad market is not as high as it once was back in 2000, for example. But I expect we will see within the next couple of years the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 break all previous records. About that point, this is my opinion, about that point, the people who have been pulling money out of the stock market and putting it into the bond market, who, by the way, who will have been losing money for 2 years or so in the bond market at that point, will suddenly realize the stock market is the place to be, and they will gradually start moving back into the stock market, and they will run it up to fair market value, and it will keep on going right on past fair market value, at which point you will hear us begin to issue warnings about the stock market. Write it down and put it someplace where you can find it a year from now and 2 years from now, and I strongly suspect you will figure out that what we're saying is correct. You better
well
have
said.
Something to say about this.
I tend to completely agree there. I'm trying to figure out if there's anything I disagree with, anything that usually I can find something. No, I'm in agreement. It's kind of scary.
Your role as the SIC.
Sick?
No, the son in charge.
Oh, I was SIC. That's what you put in after you've misspelled something on purpose, I thought.
Yeah, well, I do that pretty regularly.
My role is the correctly misspelled word.
Well, and I issued a quote in my newsletter,
which isn't out yet, but it will be soon.
The newsletter that we're about to publish, and I initially quoted Sir Winston Churchill. I found a place where I had a site for it and everything, and then one of our staff members came back and said, "Nope, he didn't say that." And sure enough, they were right. But Winston Churchill did not say, "America will always do the right thing after having exhausted all other possibilities." However, he probably thought it on quite a few occasions. He actually gave a speech to Parliament that, if you take several paragraphs out of the middle of the speech, it's basically what he was saying in there. We are in the process of exhausting all the other possibilities, and I think we're going to do very well. But we have a caller right now on 866-597-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. I have the wrong number.
You do?
All right.
Well, you can talk to us anyway.
No. On the air. Wrong number. Oh, dear.
Oh, well. We had one person who certifiably was not listening who called us. I wonder if that's the way the day goes.
Probably. I'm looking at the quote investigator here. It looks like employed by the first person
that
written up is Abba Ibn.
No, I looked that up.
Israeli
politician. He said something very different.
But it's a different thing.
That's
kind of sort of.
Yeah, and actually, there was the quote that I had said it was from the memoirs of some sir somebody or another, and it turned out it's not in his memoirs. He never probably said this.
That means it's not been attributed to anyone. That means you can take credit.
No, because actually it has been.
You're quoting somebody else who isn't named, so therefore you did it.
The first actual time that Sir Winston Churchill was credited with that in a public speech was in 1980. And
right. So in
that's very carefully recorded, but he probably never said
it. It was attributed to Winston Churchill in 1980 by Governor James Thompson of Illinois.
Yes.
I believe he was later arrested for corruption.
Yes,
so
he was.
Most of the governors of Illinois have been corrupt at some point or another. So
now you know why the governors of Illinois have been allocating a lot of money and pardoning a lot of people in the prison system because they're generally about to go there. Boy, I would not want to be governor of Illinois. The probabilities are you wind up in prison.
I think it's not the cause, it's more the effect that they...
I don't know.
I think they got to be governor of Illinois by doing things that would wind them in prison.
By the way, if you think you can balance the budget and you think you've got your solutions for it, the Wall Street Journal...
This is a great
app. Calculator. You can budget calculator. You can Google budget calculator Wall Street Journal and you can find it. You don't have to be a subscriber to the Wall Street Journal to go use their budget calculator.
It's the government budget, not your own budget.
And what you could do is you can actually go in there and you can figure out what taxes you want to not raise or raise or whatever you want to do.
And you'll find something amazing that the foreign aid to other countries is a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of our budget.
And by the way, if you do come up with a good solution and you think it's doable and workable,
Paul Ryan did.
The Wall Street Journal is taking the solutions that look like they're doable and workable, and they're publishing them.
Yeah.
And so you may actually be able to change the course of the government. Of course, now, if you just prefer to gripe about it...
Then just sit at home and gripe.
If you
just prefer to gripe about it, I don't think you should even vote. It's a lot easier to gripe if you have no input on anything, I'm just going to say.
Well, that may be true, too.
Yeah, I was very impressed. I have played with that Wall Street Journal budget calculator thing for weeks now. And the only way I can see to balance the budget in a 10-year period is to do things that are just draconian. It's really evil things like telling grandma, no, you can't have your medicine, and telling grandpa, no, you don't get as much Social Security as you thought you were going to get.
Yeah, and it's not a pretty picture either way. Now, I think you can balance it over a 20-year period without too much trouble.
Right. So we're talking about, again, what I was saying, having a balanced approach, what you were saying, having a gradual approach. The only way we are going to do this is if we do it over a long period of time, which means that we can't do it based on emotion. We have to do it, because if you do it based on emotion, you get tired of that emotion after about, 5 minutes? It's hard to keep that emotion for 20 years.
I am of the opinion that we're going to look back in a few years and see that we've done exceptionally well. That's just, again, my opinion, which is worth every penny you paid for it. But you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We do actually manage investment portfolios.
And some people actually do pay us large amounts of money for our opinions. It's
they
pretty
do.
Amazing.
And we seem to have done a reasonable job over the years because, unlike the other small businesses, we're still in business.
We're still here.
And as I've mentioned earlier,
and we're bigger.
30 years now doing this, and literally have clients who started off with a couple $100 a month who are now multimillionaires. So that's a long journey along the way, and I can't take full responsibility for any of that. But I can tell you that there are things that work and there's things that don't work, and we've tried most of the things that don't work already, so now I'm down to the things that I believe do work. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a local telephone number. There's a voicemail there at 947-1111. Of course, during the week, we are present there to answer the telephone, 947-1111. Or
toll-free 800-914-PLAN, or you can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
True. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.